accession number 2723787 wheel 1.
Major Brian Dillon, rail 1. Can you tell me when and where you were born, Major Dillon?
I was born Malahide, Dublin, 11th of May 1919.
And could you tell us a little about your family background, your parents, and the sort of life you had?
Parents were both Irish. My father, Commander Dillon, RN, DSO RN. Mother was a Massey from County Cork. At the time I was born, of course, I was born a British subject. When the Republic ceased. What I'm trying to say is I'm still an Irishman, although I was born British. You know, because up until 1923, the south of Ireland was UK. And I never took out an English passport.
Did you have a reasonably comfortable background in Dublin?
I don't remember. I was a baby. Yes, far as I know, yes. Yes.
And when did you leave? You sounds like you left.
Oh, about 1921, during the first lot of troubles. My father was still serving in the Navy, and it was deemed wise to come out. We never went back.
And where did you move to?
Moved, more or less, to Emsworth, Hampshire, Bosham. My father was still serving, then came out of the Navy, became a stockbroker, which was probably unwise, but anyway.
And where did
we
you
lived
live
down there, and he died. He was drowned sailing, actually.
Where did you live then?
Bosham, Chichester, Sussex. But my mother had lived up here. My father, Massey, had commanded the Royal Norfolk Regiment. Which was, well, a lot of, I mean, the British Army had been very hard up that Irish officer, if you know what I mean. And so she was brought up in Norfolk, largely, until she married and went to Ireland.
Now, you were living in Chichester when your father...
Bosham, Chichester, yeah. I actually was at school at Repton when he died. I was 16 by then.
Could you tell us a bit about your education?
I was at a preparatory school, Wellesley House, Broadstairs, Kent. I went to Repton and then Sandhurst. From Sandhurst, joined the Royal Norfolk Regiment in 1939.
Can you tell us a bit about your time at Repton then?
A normal career. I played football, sort of house level, ended up in the lower six, became head of house, normal kind of.
How did you do academically? Is there any particular subject you were good at or bad at?
I started out to become a doctor. When my father died, there was no money. And somebody said, I say, old boy, if you join the army, you start getting paid straight away. So I opted then for the army class and had to managed to pass.
What was the army class? Could you just explain that a bit?
The army class at schools then rather specialised on people going for the services. There's different curriculum. Different civil service exam you had to take.
So what subjects did they involve?
Maths, history, English, basically. I think nothing very special. But I'd been doing biology and chemistry and physics and all that for medicine, you see.
Now, were you in the OTC then?
Yes.
Can you tell us about the training you got in the OTC?
Oh, gosh. A lot of polishing of brass and drilling and shooting. High standard of shooting. Two very good ex-regular NCO warrant officer instructors and whatever else they did, they taught us to shoot.
Did you enjoy the OTC?
I think so. It was a thing one did. It wasn't... I suppose it was voluntary, but, I mean, everybody did it, I think.
Did you get your Cert A?
Yes. I think everybody did.
Do you remember what you had to do to get it?
Cert A. Drill was very important. Minor tactics. Map reading. about it, I think. Nothing very special.
Now, how old were you when you left Repton?
18.
So that'd be about 1937?
Yeah.
And what did you... that's when you joined the regular army, was it?
No, Sandhurst.
Tell me... Oh, of course, sorry.
Went to Sandhurst.
Tell me about your training at Sandhurst.
Rigorous. I enjoyed it, although it was tough. Well, it was the Sandhurst course, which was tactics, history, accountancy, fun enough, bookkeeping, a lot of physical PT, equitation, as they call it. You were taught to ride a horse, by God, you were taught. Shooting, drilling, generally being hustled about.
What level of tactics were they? Do you remember the sort of tactics you were taught at that time?
I suppose sort of section platoon tactics. Nothing very serious. But you studied war, if you know what I mean. Military history, great campaigns you studied. And you studied things like orders of battle. I can still remember medical evacuation, the regimental aid post, the first field dressing station, the casualty clearing station, back to the base hospital. That sort of thing you studied. The very much organization of the army. And the sort of things one learned in history, if ever we lose the Suez Canal, we're finished. And they used to say, if you've retired and the Suez Canal is threatened, you will certainly be called up, boy, because the empire will be in danger. That's sort of thing you were taught.
What about, was it very based on what had happened in the First World War or the tactics, you know?
No, I think a lot of it was, well, that was the history side, that they were fairly thorough about that, but it was previous campaigns like Battle of Waterloo and a lot about India and colonial wars, because that's what we were. Imperial policing, I've still got the book upstairs. Imperial policing you studied, which is what we were really, Imperial Police Force, the British Army then. And very little positive thought for a possible Second World War. We weren't being trained for that. Well, now one thinks about it. We were being trained to go to India, to go on the frontier, to prop up the empire. And all this rumbling about Hitler and so on. Then suddenly, I can remember filling sandbags in 1938, it was suddenly, look out, boys, there's going to be a war. It was quite sudden.
Now, did they teach you about sort of at the tactical level? You know, you said that a section movement.
Yeah.
Was that essentially trench warfare, or what was it? Or was it open order attack?
I can't, honestly don't know. I can't really remember in great detail.
What was life like at Sandhurst?
It was. Well, in some ways, it went from the sublime to the sublime. You had these marvellous guest nights, and being waited on, and bottled wine going round, drinking the Queen's health, and all dressed up, to being absolutely hammered into the ground by the drill sergeant. You thought that was bad enough. The programme never allowed time for change. Your next parade was the riding school, in which you had to be in boots and gaiters and spurs, and you were supposed to change sometime. Or you were late, and everywhere you went on bicycle, you had a drill on a bicycle. Had you heard that one?
Tell us about that.
Well, it was cavalry drill. You line up, say there are 30 of you going down to the riding school. Number 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, 1-2. Move to the right by half sections. Right turn, say right turn. Quick march, and the odd numbers stood still, and even numbers, so you went off in file. Prepare to mount. Mount. And if the chap in front fell over, you off. And you bicycled off. I'd forgotten that, but you had bicycles. And they were known as bog wheels, not bicycles. And they were kept in a great store. You each had a number. And in charge of it was an old soldier who was known as the Bogwheel General. The Bogwheel General.
How did you get on with your fellow cadets?
You made great friends that remained friends for life, I would say. And some enemies, of course. Not really, no, but friends, chums. Because you suffered together. You did suffer quite a bit.
Were they from a similar background to yourself?
There were all sorts. There were... I suppose on the whole, yes, they were mostly ex-public school or grammar school boys. There were a number of A cadets, and the A cadet was who'd come through the ranks.
How did they fit in?
Some have fitted in extraordinarily well. Others never did.
Why not, do you think? Well, what was it that in people's personality?
Nothing to do with their background or accent. There was one chap who thought he was bloody clever because he'd done 3 years in the army. And we all thought he was a shit. We knew he was a shit because he started stealing money. And he left under a cloud. But on the whole, no, we got on. There was no animosity at all because he'd come through the ranks, as it were, at all. And they'd taught us a lot. They knew a thing or
what
two.
What sort of thing?
How not to get caught out. How to clean your boots. How to, you know, they knew all about bullying up and all that kind of thing.
And what about, how did you get on with your instructors, both drill and the more academic subjects?
Well, the drill instructors were all guards, NCOs, who are the bosom brands of this world that you've probably heard of, RSM Britain, and tremendous characters. Awful bullies on the parade ground, but old daddies off the parade ground. I mean, they were marvellous people. I mean, the sort of remark, who do you think you're on set with, Mr. Dillon? The adjutant's horse? That sort of remark. And all this thing.
Did they bully at all?
Well, only verbally. I mean, there was extra parades, that sort of thing. Left, right, lit up and down and all that sort of thing. Well, yes, bullying not bullying, I suppose, not bullying, but it was harsh discipline, was the word. For instance, I can remember once, you wore nail boots, the steps up to your rooms were stone, and I remember once rushing to get on parade, falling down the steps, rifle one way, slipping, I really hurt myself. Now, what was his name? Sergeant Major Ellis, cursing me out. That's not the way to come down, says Mr. Dillon. Go up again and come down properly. I came down here. You're late, Mr. Dillon. You're in the book. So that, if you make out of there what you like. That's not the way to come downstairs. You're late. You're in the book. No excuse.
So discipline was quite
harsh.
Hard.
Harsh. Yes, it was.
What about the lecturers or the officers who
the lecturers were very good on the whole. We had I can remember he became Boy Long, Royal Norfolk Regiment, was a tactics instructor. I can remember him well. I got to know him well after the war. He was a captain then, and I can remember he always tactics. He wasn't brilliant. I didn't realise then. I thought everybody was brilliant if they were an officer. Boy, what you have to remember is to do nothing is always wrong. Any questions? That was sort of about the standard of that. And then we had an accountant. I was terribly bad at accounts, but he tried to teach us regimental accounts that you had to do that. Imperial policing history. About it, I suppose.
Now, you mentioned that in the 1938, you started to take the war, the ongoing
yes,
war.
Yes, like filling sandbags, and it was in the paper. It was all about, and Mr. Chamberlain going to and Czechoslovakia and all that, and you know there was talk of sending a force of reservists armed with walking sticks to Czechoslovakia. Do you remember? They didn't get perhaps they'd done it, might have stopped it. I don't know. There was all kinds of schemes going on to stop Hitler.
Now, why were you filling sandbags? I mean, was this for the defence of the academy?
Yes, and digging slit trenches and doing things. And
And then what happened next?
Well, in a time, I joined the regiment at Borden.
Now, when did you do that?
January, I think it was the 15th, 1939. It's good. It was after that, the Christmas term ended, and then January, I think it was the 15th, I joined. Battalion as I come back from Gibraltar.
And which battalion was this?
Second.
Of the Royal Norfolk?
Royal Norfolk. And they were at Borden camp, Borden, and then we moved out under canvas. And from there, went off to France.
Now, can you give me an idea, I mean, why had you chosen the Norfolks? I mean, what made you pick those?
Well, my mother was brought up there. My father had commanded. My grandfather had commanded them. And it seemed logical.
So it wasn't to you, it wasn't really a choice, it was just...
No, because they said put down three choices. I put down one. They said, what about the other two? I said, don't have any other choices.
What did they say to that?
It gave me a hard look, but I left it. So I got Ronald. In any case, in those days, it was a very thorough selection. It sounds very old-fashioned now, but the colonel of the regiment, who was General Sir Peter Strickland, you may have heard of him, he decided who was going to join his regiment, never mind the War Office, and you had to be interviewed by him. And I remember being taken to tea by my mother, General Sir Peter Strickland, who lived near Sandringham, and having to mind you, you know, got to be clean and tidy and behave properly when you meet Sir Peter and all that kind of thing. And I remember there was Eric Cooper Key, Bill Murray Brown, and I were at Sandhurst together. You probably heard their names, I don't know. Anyway, they're all Norfolks. And we were sent for one day by the commandant. Said, oh, my God, we're for it, you see. The commandant said, don't be late. You've got to be here at whatever, 12 o'clock on Sunday morning. No, sir, what for? For a rocket? No, General Sir Peter Strickland is coming down to interview his potential officers, and you've got to be... What we hadn't realized is, he was absolutely shit scared of Peter. The commandant of Sandhurst was shit scared of Strickland, and we mustn't let him down.
What was he like, Strickland?
He was a hell of a chap. He was a fellow in the First World War. He was a corps commander, and he was ordered to carry out one of these Western Front attacks. He refused. They said, General Strickland, we'll soon find another general who will. If you insist. The attack will be carried out, but I will command the leading section and undoubtedly get killed. You can put that in your bloody newspaper. The attack was cancelled. So that went round. The soldier said, we've got a general here who looks after us. And the other thing he did after the war, he was commanding in Egypt. And there was a divisional, yes, there was a division in Egypt then. Annual general inspection in Cairo, all on the square. The cavalry, 10th Hussars, were on the right, and he didn't like cavalry, being an infantry one. He rode up to the 10th Hussars with his staff jingling behind him and said, Colonel, whatever name, Snodgrass, whatever his name was, take your regiment away and bring it back when it is clean. The 10th Hussars had to move to the right by half sections, march, walk, march, and off they went. You'll never forgive him for that. Well, the 10th Hussars never forgave him. Bring back your regiment when it is clean.
What was he like when he interviewed you? I mean, how did, you know, what
he was quite. He was quite avuncular, actually. He didn't bully young men, but he bullied those in authority if he thought they needed it. And years later, this is another regimental story, Peter Barclay, you've heard of, no doubt, had commanded in France and Germany. We were laying up our colours at Sandringham. Bob Hammond and I were the colour party, and I remember we were at Sandringham, and there was a tea with, there was the King, the Queen, and the two princesses. It was quite an occasion at Sandringham. And we didn't know anything about this. They dug Peter Strickland out to do colonel, although he'd retired long ago because, what's his name, who was the colonel that had a heart attack? Hayes has had a heart attack. And somebody else was gone, and a senior officer had gone to live in Kenya. So Strickland was dug out, and nobody knew this. He had some disease, which he couldn't compulsive disease, which now and again, if he had to pee, he would pee, like in the fireplace. And only two people knew of this. He was given some pills to control it. And Peter Barclay knew, and the MO knew, but the Tea Party went on and on and on. And why were they eyeing him up and down? He was eyeing the fireplace in the Royal Drawing Room. The reason that he'd been delayed and we hadn't fallen out was Princess Margaret had refused to go. The King had gone, the Queen had gone, and Princess Elizabeth had withdrawn, but Princess Margaret was still there, making eyes at Bob Hammond, always rather fancied his good looks. And she apparently said to Bob, "Aren't there any other young men in your regiment?" And then Queen Elizabeth came back and said, "Come on, Margaret." She took no notice. The Queen came. She took no notice. Then the King came and said, "Out!" And then we could go. And fortunately, General Sir Peter had not peed in the fireplace. Anyway.
Now, when you went in January, you got your commission into the regiment, and you went to Borden Camp in January 1939. What were your first impressions of the battalion that you were joining?
Well, it was very exciting. One was very frightened of going into the officers' mess, and one was warned to go nowhere near the fire. The only senior officers go near the fire. And the other thing, you were dined in. You were warned all about this dining in. The object was to get you drunk, of course.
Well, tell me about that. What was the dining in like? What was the whole thing like that evening?
Well, there you were, and you were the guest, you see, and they plied you with drink. And then I'd been warned, I forget who by, that whatever else happens, PT parade is 6:30 tomorrow morning. If you fail to be on it, you've had it. And I told my batman, "Whatever happens, I've got to be on." "Yes, sir, you will be on PT parade." And I was. But I mean, that was the first test, really.
And what was the evening like? I mean, what sort of was the pattern of the evening?
Oh, well, the band played, and there was a lot of talk, and the port was passed, and you lit a cigar and felt sick and all that kind of thing. It was...
Were you used to drinking?
You were drinking, yes, beer. You was brought up on mild beer. And I remember my first company commander, Henry Owis, who was sadly killed in France, he said, "Duff of all that mild beer. What you want is a pink gin. I call it sunshine after rain." That was a guest night, one felt.
Sort of. Did they have the sort of the mess games for the Royal Norfolk Yes. Watch for that? Yeah. Do you remember any of them?
Well, it was High Cockalorum and all these sort of the boat race, pulling on a stick, all these bloody stupid things. Why we didn't all break our necks, I don't know. Well, we did occasionally. I remember years later, adjutant of the TA battalion, doing this. You sit on the floor and play, pulling. There's eight there and eight there, and you put your arm around the chap in front. I was quite good at gripping then, pulling. And the MO, who's a very tough chap, had his arms around me, pulling. "Oh, Christ!" He said, "You've broken a rib, old boy." I said, "I haven't. You bloody well broke it." And he said, "He had." Anyway, yes, it was that sort of stupid.
Did you enjoy mess games?
Well, I think if you were sufficiently inebriated, I was never a great fan. And then the other thing was going round, depending on the mess, without touching the floor. You know, you had to hang on to anything that was available. Stupid things.
Now, who were the key figures in the officers' mess? Who was the colonel at the time?
I mean, Eric Hayes was the colonel.
And what were you? I mean, you were just the junior lieutenant.
Yes.
What was he like, Eric Hayes?
He was a very able chap. A very good CO. Very remote, of course, for a second lieutenant.
What made him a good CO? For you?
I think he was very, very fair and very confident. He was obviously very impressed by anything he said or did.
And what other senior officers
do? Eric Prattley was second in command, who sat in the bag in Singapore commanding the 5th Battalion, I think.
What was he like, Prattley?
Prattley was a great sportsman.
Prattley or Prattley?
Prattley. Great sportsman, cricketer and all that sort of thing. And Marshall, no, Gammy Marshall was the adjutant, who was a university entrant. It was quite different from the Sandhurst entrant. He was very bright, of course, much brighter than that. And remained friends forever the rest of his life. When I was commanding the depot, he was administrative officer years later.
What was his first name?
He was known as Gammy. Now, what the hell was his real name? I honestly can't remember. He was known as Gammy.
Any other senior officers?
There was Humphrey Wilson, who was a senior subaltern, who is still alive, aged 90 something or other, lives in the West Country, who was a great sportsman, great horseman, I remember. I can't really remember many others.
What about some of the young ones who joined with you? Murray Brown was
Murray Brown,
later on very well known officer.
He commanded at Cohima.
And what was he like as a subaltern?
Always led the pack. He was a great athlete, great games player, and a fun-loving chap.
Any the other subalterns who joined with you?
There was a chap called Buchanan, who I think was killed in France. I'm getting so senile. They're all in the army list.
Now, what about the senior NCO, well, the regiment, the warrant officers?
Yeah.
Who was the RSM? Did you have much to do with
it? Wait a minute. Of course I know. I just can't get my tongue around his name now. It'll come in a minute.
Okay. What was your impression of the senior NCOs of the unit? I mean, did they impress?
I don't know. I think in those days you just accepted things. I don't think one's faculties were very critical then. That's how it was.
Were you aware of
Tony Everett was the other one. Subaltern was a great show. I was a keen yachtsman, dinghy sailor, and he and I used to sail. And he also lived in Norfolk. And I remember we went down just before we went off to France, and we went for a sail at Chichester Harbour where I got the boat. And I said, we put it on the trailer to bring it back to lay it up because we knew. He said, that's the last sail I shall ever have. I said, no, Mr. Stupid, when, you know, the boat was through there. No, he said, I'm not coming back. And he was absolutely, he was the first officer in the British Army to be killed in the Maginot Line. But I've never forgotten that.
Now, any other characters? I mean, were you aware of any other sort of people that stood out?
Well, the company commander, Peter Barclay.
Barclay,
who won the first MC of the war.
Now, what was he like? Because he was very well known.
Barclay was a real soldier's officer, but totally irresponsible.
In what way?
Well, I tell you, this is now we've got to France.
Oh, hang on. I'll save that till we get there.
Yeah.